happy family day to our family, our loyal listeners, the Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish. You know what I was just thinking? I pointed to you, Gloria, the blues.
Yes.
We can never change it now.
It now applies.
Because.
It's for Ryan.
It's for our newest family member.
It's for Clinton, Ontario.
Ryan O'Reilly. We made it happen. My poem made its way through the internet into Ryan O'Reilly's viewing. He thought, there's no way I can't come to Toronto now because the city loves me and they're writing me poems,
he heard the calls.
Sonnets.
Beautiful rhymes.
And here we are.
Do you have it off the top of your head?
We might
have to revisit that in a later segment.
Shoot, I should have had it ready.
That's okay. We got a little segment planned for Ryan O'Reilly a little later, I think.
We do.
So we can revisit the poem then.
Anyway, it's great to be, you know what? Sometimes you think it'd be nice to not work a holiday, but today?
Yeah, it would be nice to not work a holiday.
Been waiting three nights for it.
We have been waiting three nights for it. A little of the shine off the situation, a little bit after last night. I was thinking, like in the lead up to yesterday's game, of course, the Leafs lost to Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. We'll talk about Pat Kane and all that later. Could this be like the best weekend in recent memory for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Friday night.
Acquire Ryan O'Reilly, who won the Conn Smythe Trophy 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night, big vibe game. Hammer the Montreal Canadiens. Sunday night, get a victory. What a weekend. Three nights, three headlines to be real excited about. But alas, those vibes kind of dissipated in a loss to Chicago.
And the Patty Kane takes that yours truly had, but him being washed, I'll swallow my pride.
Yeah, not great.
It's all right. That's what you live and learn. Live in the moment. And sometimes Patrick Kane also hears your takes and says, yeah.
He's playing the game, though. He's playing the hard-to-get game, right? He's like the guy who or the girl who didn't want to go to the dance, and then people partner up, and they're like, well, I wanted to go with you, right? Like, that's what he's doing.
Is that what happened to
you? It happened all the time to me. It's like, what are you doing, man? You had your chance to go to New York. They move on, and you're salty about it. Then the Leafs clearly move on, whether they had any interest or not, and all of a sudden you're like Patrick Kane of 2012.
Yeah. We'll get to that. Let's start with the good stuff. So Friday night, I decided I was going to have a no-screen night, and I was going to start reading.
Very therapeutic.
Justin Bourne's book.
One step towards Aaron Rodgers in the darkness.
That's
just
right.
Turning TVs off.
Oh, God, I don't want to be like that. So I thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to take a no-screen night. I'm going to start reading Bourne's book, which I went and picked up. I'm really excited to read. I have cracked the spine. You know, the smell of a nice, fresh book. And I'm no Kindle girl. I'm like, I want to hold the book in my hands.
Right.
I swear to you, I got through maybe three pages, and I forgot to turn my silence off my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, something clearly, like maybe it's Justin bugging me because he's crushing Bud Lights and he's wearing slippers at the cottage.
To my credit, I did not bug you.
No, you didn't. It's like you didn't exist. Your friends gave me all the insight that I needed.
I didn't realize there was communication happening.
Anyway, so I look at my phone, and it took me a second to really process what was happening. Ryan O'Reilly traded to Toronto Maple Leafs and Olachary, who, let's not sleep on him. And Bourne threw the book down. It's time to dig into the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so the initial feeling, they hadn't even, Elliot hadn't even got through what the package was, the picks and the retention and the three-team trade, but I was fired up. Like, this is a guy that we, over the last couple weeks, and even, I guess, a couple months when we weren't sure which direction the St. Louis Blues are going to go, that was going to be a red-hot trade target. He's 4 years removed from a Conn Smythe and Stanley Cup championship. I think we can all state that he's been playing for a pretty terrible team.
Mm-hmm.
His production obviously is not at the level that it has been once in his career, but it is so incredible to listen to other players, other staff, other organizations talk about what Ryan O'Reilly brings off the ice. He is maybe one of the most well-respected players in the NHL, a leader, a guy that was going to bring so much to this locker room. And yes, I understand that doesn't win you a championship, but I think it really does unite a team and bring an energy level that we saw Saturday night. That arena was going to explode against Montreal Canadiens. Already the rivalry is storied. Regional Six, Saturday Night Hockey Night in Canada. But when they announced Ryan O'Reilly in that starting lineup, it was probably one of the loudest times I've heard Scotiabank Arena this year. And I've been to every single home game.
There you go.
And there's just this energy around the Maple Leafs going all in, saying, this is it. Kyle Dubas who said he wasn't going to trade big chips for rentals. Well, I did it anyway. And he says, I believe that this team earned it and we're going in to get one of the biggest fish in the trade deadline. And they did it, and the energy was insane.
I think the main takeaway from the weekend was just how much of a Leaf he looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he looks more like a Leaf than any of the Leafs who've been here forever.
He's got,
like,
incredible
style. He just looks like a Maple Leaf. I don't know if it's the teeth, which are hella white, the missing tooth. Is it the lack of visor? I'm not really sure, but he stepped out on the ice and you're like, he was a Leaf.
He's always been a Leaf jersey.
This guy's always been a Leaf. I had that similar experience of you when the trade was announced. Like, I was on my way to the bathroom and someone says, you see that? I was like, Ryan O'Reilly traded the Leafs.
You didn't see my text?
And I was just like frozen. And then I was in the bathroom for 40 minutes on Twitter. And then I returned to what I was doing at my buddy's cottage. Like, it was just like, it completely derailed my evening, or at least for a second there, because it's a massive, massive deal. And it kind of runs counter to, as you mentioned, what Dubas was saying. Yeah, I'm not going to trade this for rental. I'm not going to exhaust my assets for a rental. And perhaps he's not a rental. Perhaps Nolichari is not a rental in the end. But right now they're on expiring deals and this is an all-in move. Mm-hmm. Now, what percentage of all-in is it? I was thinking about too. Because Bourne said, speaking of Bourne, no half measures was his rule. My rule was don't let it affect 2024. And I don't really think they affected 2024 because they spent a bunch of first round picks that are in 2023. And no one in 2023 draft is going to help you in 2024. So I guess they kind of avoided that.
Unless you get Bedard.
Unless you get Bedard. But it's like, it's not half measures either, like, or not full measures either. It's not half measures, not full measures. I think it's like three quarter measures.
Well, I think I personally think that this is part one of something else.
It feels like it has to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it doesn't completely optimize and fix this team. I mean, Justin Hall's out there waving his stick around like last night. Like, how have we regressed to the point where he looks terrible again? Like, he looked really bad again. And it feels like, you know, Sandin in and out, Timmins, probably not going to trust him. It feels like they're one piece short. But if you look up front, and we can talk about the lines and what it may or may not look like going into the future here, but they were a shell of a elite team 10 days ago without mm-hmm. Austin Matthews. You add two centers, two potentially dominant centers, a recent Hart Trophy winner, a recent like Selke nominee year over year over year over year. Like, they look like a really formidable group all of a sudden. It looks like they are just stocked with talent and that there's really no weakness in the forward unit. But you can't say the same about defense. So we'll see if there's another move. There's just not much else to trade from the cupboard, which is pretty barren at this time.
And that's difficult. So now they have some wiggle room in terms of cap, but they don't have...
And that's the key. That should tell you everything because they got him down to 1.8.
That's incredible.
It's like, okay, you have space. You got to use that space now.
And so I think that that's what tips the hand to me, that there's some space. But you're right. There isn't really like something to trade unless you're moving from your active roster. And I think this opens the door for Sandin, for Hall, maybe some of those moves that we discussed last week when we talked about Jake McCabe or co.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of what it does to this forward lineup, obviously Ryan O'Reilly is Ryan O'Reilly, but Nolichari specifically, I think, has gone under the radar a bit with this trade. He's a really good player.
Yes.
And
he's the type of guy who was on Boston. He was, but on those teams and you're just like, God, we kind of need some of those guys. Mm-hmm. And you never have those guys. And all of a sudden you do have one of those guys in Nolichari. Pretty important part of this trade and a reason why, hey, if you can one-stop shop, maybe Achari's just kind of a throw-in to make this happen, which is a really nice throw-in.
Big time. And so the way he's already impacted this bottom six, that's when you say that there's a lot of depth. For me, it's just exactly what happened with that bottom six that needed to happen, where you bring in a higher-level NHL player and love Pontus Holmberg. We've been the push for Pontus to get mm-hmm. him in the All-Star game as a joke, but yep. He was pretty good. He did all he could do. But
now you're sixth best center.
Yeah. And so there's way more depth back there. It gave the bottom six some identity, and they also are playing for some of them are playing for their spot now. Kerfoot, Engvall, some of these players that weren't really producing, a Camp, your buddy, like, who got his first goal in like 40 games mm-hmm. yesterday, or Saturday night. Yeah. No, it was like 25 games, but all of those guys now, They got to pull up their socks a bit because they know if they're shipping out somebody in this bottom six, it could be any of them. And at least both or three of them played a little bit better this weekend, maybe with a little bit more of attention to, I don't want to leave this team. I don't want to get traded. I got to pick it up. So it not only gave some more depth on the back end, it kind of lit a fire under some guys.
It feels like there's a bunch of guys now playing for one spot.
Mm-hmm.
You add Matthews, that adds someone to the bottom or pushes someone down to the bottom six. You add O'Reilly, pushes someone else down to the bottom six. You add Achari, who's probably the number one bottom six piece at current moment. Whether he plays on the fourth line or not, I think he's the one guy. Clearly, you targeted him, so you want him to be playing a major role. But in terms of trust, he might be up there. He might be surpassing Kampf, at least in that regard, although I don't think he's going to play some third-line center minutes. But yeah, I think when I was in the bathroom tweeting for 40 minutes, I tweeted that he was the most...
People, come check in on you?
No, they're just making fun of me when I came back.
Do you need toilet paper, Justin?
No, not that time. I thought it was the most reasonable addition. So we've been talking about, okay, what could be out there? What Patrick Kane, all week last week, and then this week into Ryan O'Reilly. Like, you look at his hockey reference. They added a guy who's, finished fourth Selke, fifth the year before, third the year before, won it the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're always on that list. Lady Bing, you're nominated every year. This is a guy who is wildly respected around the league. Someone who is respected for their two-way game. And if we're talking about what the Leafs need, yeah, they have all the firepower. They don't have all the firepower in the world, but they got a lot of it. And could they use more of it? Sure, they probably could have used more of it. But what do you win with? You win with a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. Now, the question is, how much does he have left? Is he still the guy who can compete for a Selke trophy? The history suggests he can. He, as you mentioned, played for a really bad team, and that was putting him in a spot where it was difficult dealing with a lot of injuries. But if you're talking about risk and managing risk with an addition, yeah, there's risk trading first-round draft picks and going all in like this.
There would have been a risk with doing that for Patrick Kane as well.
Yeah, but it's like Kane, and we saw yesterday, if he scores three goals, wow, Patrick Kane. Mm-hmm. But the previous, 55 games of his season where he only had 9 going into that game last week, like, you're not getting much value out of that, because if he's not scoring or putting up points, he's not doing anything for you. But Ryan O'Reilly can do everything for you. He can improve your penalty kill. He can improve your faceoff percentage. He can improve your defensive zone coverage. He can play on the second line and make sure that John Tavares moves over and has less responsibility if that's what you so choose. Now, I do think we should talk about the role, and I think it's a little unfortunate now that after this loss, it looks like a demotion if you put him on the third line, but I think he should be anchoring the third line.
Okay, so the lineup stuff will be really interesting. Obviously, he flew in Saturday and played Saturday with Noel Achari, and so obviously no time.
And that first shift, by the way.
Oh my God. I had put money on first goal Ryan O'Reilly because I'm like, it's going to happen, the narrative. And it was crazy in that arena, as I said. Anyway, so there hasn't been much time for this team to get acclimated. No lineup. There hasn't been a practice. He flew in a Canadian tuxedo, let me just tell you. You're talking about a guy that was born to play hockey.
Looks like a Leaf.
Lands, gets to the arena. They have to give him a helmet and pants, fit him for stuff. And then he basically stayed there and played a game. Then they get on the plane to go to Chicago. Today they have a day off, I assume. So
I think they do, yeah. I don't think they're going to practice.
So then he might practice Tuesday for the first time with Lions, and that's going to be interesting. I want to play this clip about Sheldon Keefe finding out about the Ryan O'Reilly trade and then not being able to sleep because he was so excited and then line ideas going through his brain, just kind of like all of us.
Obviously very exciting. I was on my way driving back from my son's hockey game, so I couldn't do too much about it. But, yeah, it was exciting. It was tough to sleep, to be honest. It was just, trying to think about all the different, as a coach, all the different options that it presents, and you get excited about it. So I think I'm just like the players that you're thrilled to be able to make your team better.
Okay, so he can obviously be a bit of a hybrid player, which is one of the reasons that I was excited about acquiring him last week. And your point about putting him on the third line seeming like a demotion, I think this is, there's a buffer here. The fact that
it's not a big deal. But it's just like, maybe that didn't work out
I know what you mean. This next 2 weeks, though, and that's part of the benefit of trading for someone so early in the trade deadline. Like, they get to really, plug and play and put him in some different positions. Mm-hmm. If you acquired him, March 3rd, the day of the trade deadline, and March 8th, then you're kind of like, okay, this is our puzzle piece, and we're putting it in there, and we're going for it, right? But and you have a little bit less time.
To 25 games.
So you got some time here for plus Ryan O'Reilly to have the opportunity to play third line, to play second line, to mix and match. And I think the biggest question I had with putting him with John Tavares, which we did see, was they're not both not fleet of foot.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the fastest guys together, but defensively, an immaculate pairing. Like, you're not, like, those guys are.
And Mitch Marner is the best defensive forward probably on that line, even with Selke nominee Ryan O'Reilly.
So you put the three of those guys on a line, and you're telling me top line on Boston, top line on Tampa is going to overpower them or outman them? I think that's your good shutdown line. But, as we said, they're not the fastest to the duo there, but I think that's a really great option. The best part is you do have options, and I think this is for Sheldon Keefe in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, is just he gets to experiment with one of the best players that we've seen in a long time.
I don't think it's my preferred option for a couple reasons, but I'll start with the idea that they might be too slow or pace being a problem. Like, I'm not really sure. Like, I think it's worth exploring because I don't know if this really applies perfectly. But if you talk about like a really good defensive team in the NBA, they play to their own speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
They decide the tempo at which the game is played because they can control it. And I do feel like it won't be all that big of an issue if they do what they do in the offensive zone. Like, it doesn't matter how slow you might be getting through the middle of the ice if you're exclusively playing in the offensive zone and the slow kind of plodding cycle pace that they can probably employ on their best nights would be, I think, maybe a bigger strength than maybe, you know, counterattack would be a weakness. If you look at that line, I wonder if them playing as a unit would be more effective than the alternatives. And I don't know, and I don't really believe that the pace would be all that big of an issue because Mitch Marner can get back if there's a turnover and break things up, and he can get you in the offensive zone as well. So I'm not really sure about that. However, it wasn't all that fantastic out of the gate. If you do look at the numbers, 22 minutes, 49 seconds together at 5-on-5, outscored 2-1, expected goals rate of 47.5. So the opposition being Montreal and Chicago, got the better of Ryan O'Reilly, John Tavares, and Mitch Marner in 23 minutes over the last two games. So as much as that first shift was awesome, if you look at it as a whole, they didn't really click right away. And that's okay. They could definitely click in the future. I don't think speed was necessarily an issue. Familiarity was probably the bigger thing. It just didn't quite work immediately. That doesn't mean it can't work. However, Ryan O'Reilly is used to anchoring his own line. He's used to being a guy who can play against the top competition of the other team. And really, I think that's what you want. Mm-hmm. And what I don't want is John Tavares out there against top competition. As much as O'Reilly and Mitch Marner are great defensive players, I don't think John Tavares is.
But you don't think that with Ryan O'Reilly, it actually like takes a little bit off of John Tavares, who's
it is. But I don't want pressure off John Tavares. What I want from John Tavares is mismatches. So if Ryan O'Reilly plays against the best players on the other team, mm-hmm. Austin Matthews goes fire versus fire against the second. Like, let's say it's Tampa. It's Point versus Matthews, and it's Stamkos, Kucherov versus O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that leave John Tavares to play with, against, and maybe Mitch Marner to play against? Like a third line with Nick Paul or whatever it may be? So what I want from John Tavares, I want to weaponize John Tavares as much as possible, and shifting him over to the wing maybe helps in that regard somewhat, at least takes off some of that defensive responsibility. But ideally for me, John Tavares is playing against lesser competition and racking up points. Because Ryan O'Reilly can hold his own with a Yarncroke, probably not a Camp. Camp's probably fourth line now. Yarncroke, Kerfoot, Yarncroke, Engvall. That line can play against really good lines because it's Ryan freaking O'Reilly, who's one of the best two-way centers in the game and has been in the same conversation as Patrice Bergeron for Selke Award or trophies. Very, very important. You know what he can do. He can be an expert shutdown center. You put him against the top line, Matthews goes fire against fire, and John Tavares and Mitch Marner can feast on lesser competition. I think that's the best case scenario for the Leafs, but we'll see if we see that.
And that's the exciting part about the next couple of weeks is the Maple Leafs, other than last night, which we want to get to about how that kind of deflated the wind from the sails. That's a real saying, right?
I don't Something know like if that. You deflate the wind from sails.
Removed it?
Remove the wind from your sails, yeah.
Something like that. Someone will text me immediately, yeah, you got it wrong, idiot. Anyway, you know what I'm trying to say. The Maple Leafs are still in a fight right now, though.
You took the wind out of someone's sails.
That's it.
Yeah.
For the first, for home ice and losing to the Chicago Blackhawks. Not really helping you out in that battle. But yes, the next couple weeks now come from, all right, like, let's just get to the trade deadline too. Let's find the best fit for Ryan O'Reilly. Let's keep winning some important games here so we get home ice advantage and we get to plug and play with a guy that is versatile enough that you get to have some fun with it. Noel Acciari as well. It'll be nice to see these guys have a week where they get acclimated to being in a completely different dressing room with players that they have ever played with and actually have a practice under their belt. They're not back on the ice till Tuesday, but once again, it's on the road against the Sabres, and today they probably have an off day. So when are you getting an opportunity to practice? They play again Friday night at home. So sometime during this week, we hope to see a full practice mm-hmm. where both of those guys get opportunity to play with different line mates and get themselves into a spot where they can get a couple games in a row. I want to play a couple more of the clips. So obviously with John Tavares as a leader of this Toronto Maple Leafs team, he's asked a lot about what it's like to have Ryan O'Reilly join the team. These two guys both lead by example. They're people with a lot of respect as well. It's interesting to always hear a captain talk about, okay, you're getting another captain on the team, right? It's not like that's insignificant. So here's Tavares also about waking up to find the trade and how that injected some energy on Saturday night's game against the Montreal Canadiens.
When I woke up this morning, so obviously a pretty good wake up. See the news, really exciting for our team, our group, and no doubt our fan base. So you know, when Kyle and management make a move like that, obviously sends a strong message, the belief in the team and what we want to accomplish, and just where we've gotten to this point. So we're really excited about it. I think should be just a real boost, obviously, with two really solid players and what they bring and what they've accomplished. But just overall, from an energy perspective, anytime you make those type of additions, you know, like I said, sends a strong message and gets the group energized and excited.
Okay, the point that we kind of touched on, but I want to come back to, is what's next for Ryan O'Reilly in the season. By the way, we're going to have Luke Fox on to talk about this. We're actually going to have Ryan O'Reilly's father on as well, Brian O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Brian, Ryan, all of them joining. He's going to come on at 8:30 and just talk about this, you know, whirlwind of a moment. And obviously a guy that's probably loved the Leafs his whole life, what this is all about. That's something to look forward to at 8:30. But Dubas does what he kind of said he wasn't going to do, right? To trade away some...
And just to spell it out, a first round, a second round, a third round, and a fourth round pick to get Ryan O'Reilly and Noel Acciari.
And following this transaction, the Leafs now own just two draft picks in the upcoming draft in the fifth and sixth round, so...
Yeah.
And they have their
first... We can take that day off.
They have their first round pick in 2024, but they've traded away their second and third round picks, and... of notable importance, they still have Matthew Nyes. So think about this as well. If you're invigorating this bottom six, maybe there's less pressure on Matthew Nyes now to come in and be a guy that impacts this roster right away, because you have Noel Acciari in there now. You have Ryan O'Reilly now.
If you're Zach Aston-Reese, you're thinking...
Bye-bye.
Ooh.
Because if
Matthew Nyes comes in, there's nowhere for basically anyone who was trying out for this team at any point who wasn't completely... You know,
he'll
written
get an opportunity
in,
over
written in the
else.
Lineup in pen. If Matthew Nyes shows up, then the Zach Aston-Reeses, the Joey Andersons, the Bobby McMahons, anyone who was playing at the depths of the lineup that wasn't a for sure thing, they don't have a spot because this lineup is saturated with talent now.
And so that's it. So Matthew Nyes was coming into, people thought, maybe be a top six role, come in right away from college. He did get another game winning goal this past
weekend. He can still be top six role.
And he can, and that's fine. But there's less pressure immediately when his season ends to come in and impact this roster. He can still, and I'm hopeful he will, but maybe he starts on the third line and it isn't. The Matthew Nyes experiment isn't, buddy, you better come in here and change this roster right away. It's just a bit of buffer. Anyway, so back on Dubas and the decision to, you know, kind of make this...
To do what he said he was reluctant to do.
Right. So he's obviously been asked by the media about, okay, are you not worried about your future draft opportunities? What's next in the future? Here's Dubas post-trade talking about the amount of draft picks that they have in the future.
I'd be lying to sit up here and say that isn't a concern of mine. I don't think it's sustainable for the very long run. I think with where we're at right now, we have to do what we have to do. And with the way that those guys had progressed, like whether it's the Minton, Nyes, Grabinkin, I just was more comfortable moving the picks than I was moving the people who we know and have got a deeper insight into their potential, also how they work with our development staff. And the picks are not as certain. I know not everyone would agree with that, and there's an opportunity cost of that, but that was the route we decided to go down.
Dubas loves his guys. He loves the guys he paid a lot of money to, and why wouldn't he? Core four guys, why wouldn't he? But he loves the guys he actually has drafted. He devalues draft picks and overvalues, I think. And that's what I'm worried about with Matthew Nyes, honestly. Because the Matthew Nyes thing's taken on a life of its own, clearly. But Fraser Minton, who he got after trading out of the first round, and everyone celebrated that because Peter Mrazek was on the way out. It's like, I don't know what it is. Is he holding on to Fraser Minton because he loves him and expend a pick on him? Maybe. Or is it that no one else values the Leaf prospects the same way that he does? It's like, no one wants Topi Niemelä. Nobody wants Ronnie Hirvonen. No one wants maybe Rasmus Sandin. Maybe no one wants Matthew Nyes the same way we talk about Matthew Nyes. I do think that's a possibility. But it's also the safer thing. It's the safer thing to trade away the draft pick. It's the safer thing to acquire the draft pick because it's in the moment you can't question. Oh, it's draft pick. I want the draft pick. Oh, you spent currency. That's draft pick. You need to get better. Spend a draft pick. I think it's a safe thing, and it's full NHL where it's like, we don't want the prospect because then that prospect will have that magnifying glass and there'll be pressure on the performance of that draft pick when it's already defined with the draft pick that you get. It's the safe play. It's the safe play so far for Dubas, and it's usually the safe play with teams that are looking to sell off assets because you did your job if you got your draft picks.
Second part of all of this, and when the dust settles, what happens with Ryan O'Reilly after this season? Mm-hmm. He's obviously not signed to a contract. He's a local guy. I'm going to give you the Know Your Hamlet about Clinton at 7:30. Yes. You just stay tuned. I got lots of facts on Clinton.
There might be some clues there.
There might be.
What do the people in Clinton value?
Oh, I'll tell you all about Clinton. Anyway, of course, this is going to make a big difference. Maybe hard to fully evaluate and grade this trade when you don't know what's going to happen to Ryan O'Reilly. And it would certainly be a Nick Foligno-esque experiment if he doesn't stay and you spend what you spend and you don't get out of the first round. Obviously, that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is you make a little runway in the playoffs. Ryan O'Reilly finds a way he wants to take a sweetheart deal. Mm-hmm. This is obviously something that could be a little bit far-fetched as well. His guy's made millions of dollars in his career. I don't think he goes the Geo route.
Over $75 million in career earnings. This guy's been around for a while. He's made a lot of money.
So part of that is he could still get the bag more than league minimum somewhere else. But maybe he wants to play in Toronto where he was local to and probably loved his whole life.
Yeah, how much does this mean to him?
And
I think it's worth exploring.
It will be.
I think it's a really important thing. And I'm glad you brought up Nick Foligno because Nick Foligno, for all intents and purposes, they wanted him back, but they may have sent him a bit of a, I don't want to say low ball, maybe it was a low ball offer, maybe something slightly offensive, like I'm worth way more than that, are you kidding me? But that was probably all the Leafs could really do at the time. But then Foligno signs in Boston for the type of money that no one, at least that I talked to, ever expected him to get. So there will be options out there for Ryan O'Reilly. He will be highly sought after no matter what happens on this playoff run with the Maple Leafs. But if he decides, and all the information we've gotten so far, and we'll talk to Brian O'Reilly about what it meant.
We're straight up asking Brian if he's signing.
No, what the Leafs meant to the family. That's at least like some clue, something down, a breadcrumb on the path to what it actually means. But it looks like it means a lot to him to be a Maple Leaf. He looks like a happy and content and accomplished guy. And you know, and he knows, you can make your legend if you have success with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is 5 times 5? Is that a starting point to talk about? You haven't thought about what the contract could be? 75 in career earnings, that would push him to 100 million in career earnings.
5 more years is a lot of years.
He's 30, turning to 32. I think you have to do something like that if you're the Leafs. I don't know. That might be completely unrealistic.
Mm. You know who we have also? Frank Saravelli at 7. He's going to have a pulse on what's going on.
And Luke Fox. These guys would probably have a little bit better of an idea But if he wants to be a Leaf, I don't think we should be holding him his feet to the fire. Hey, you got to be like Mark Giordano.
No,
and
no,
make $800,000.
Not the case for sure.
And he could go to market and get probably what he makes now, which is 7.5. But maybe there's a want. Maybe this works out really, really well. Maybe he wants to be here, and maybe they pick the right guy in terms of rental because he might be more likely to stick around and make sure that those four draft picks aren't completely wasted, even if there's not success this season or the type of success they want.
Definitely not insignificant that he's from this area and that his family and everybody else that we've heard from knows that this means a lot to him.
And I'll say it again. If John Tavares leaves no other legacy, if he fails in his 7 years to win a single playoff round, the best thing you can say about him is he made things a little bit more acceptable to come home. It seems like all these guys are excited to be Leafs. We've went through the list. Mm-hmm. Thornton, Simmons, Giordano.
But they all kind of have a similar end of career type
and O'Reilly's
trajectory.
Getting to the final, this will be the last chance to sign a decent contract for him.
That's what I 100%. Worry about is that, not that I think he's in the same boat as those three, but it is similar of a guy in the later stages of his career coming back to Toronto, signing a deal. And has Simmons been impactful? Was
no.
Joe Thornton impactful?
No.
Gio's been great.
Yep.
So, anyway, I just want to play this one clip, too. Dubas was obviously asked, again, by the reporters about if an extension was in the works the day that they signed Ryan O'Reilly, and it's certainly a question we all have. This was his answer.
That always becomes the topic with this, and I think that you want to see how the player fits in with where you're at, whether they like it here, whether it's the right fit. The term that I use in that is I'd like to, like, the people to live together before they get married a little bit rather than take that step without it. That's just my view. It doesn't mean that it's right. I know other teams have different views on it, but my view is you want to make sure that the mix is right in the house before you commit to being together for a long time.
That said, I think you probably tested the compatibility waters a little bit.
Beforehand, you mean?
Yeah, like, okay, you want them to live together before they're married?
I haven't heard one negative thing about Ryan O'Reilly.
Hey,
he seems like the ultimate gem of a human.
I think maybe compared notes. Do we have similar interests? Do we like the same foods?
I think they're
like,
good.
I think maybe that's something that they explored a little bit. I think you have to, at least with the price that they paid, have some sort of idea maybe where what he prefers in his next step. I think there has to be at least some inroads towards that. I don't know if it'll work out. I think they probably had the same thing with Nick Foligno and probably thought they'd keep him around. But if Boston comes over the top like they did with Foligno and says, hey, we'll give you way more money than you probably deserve, then Ryan O'Reilly might make that decision. But I think it's important that it's not someone... If we're talking Patrick Kane, who was more likely to stay between them? You'd say Ryan O'Reilly, right?
Yeah, I would say
that. And I do think it's important because he said he's reluctant to do it. He did it. I hope that means there's at least some inclination that it could exist beyond this year. I will say, though, it's full Alex Anthopoulos for Kyle Dubas.
The parallels are incredible.
If he trades Matthew Nyes for a defenseman, it is all in. It is exhaust every resource. It is, this is my swan song. This is like me going for it in my last potential opportunity to be here. And if he goes all in and they fail, I mean, you kind of have to be like, okay.
Kind of.
You have to. And I will give him credit for doing this because
he also said, doesn't matter about his contract, he would have made this move regardless.
Yeah.
And I really do think this is
if he
an
trades
exact
Nyes,
example
though,
of that.
I don't believe him. If he trades Nyes, I think it's like, I am not leaving here without giving it my best effort. That's what it feels like. If he trades Nyes for a defenseman. Would you trade Nyes for a defenseman right now?
Oh, who?
Let's say it's
Jacob Chychrun's name again. I'm going to literally jump.
Okay, I'm not going to say McCabe because McCabe, although I think...
No, you're not trading Nyes for McCabe.
You're not trading Nyes for McCabe, and you can't trade anything. Maybe you could trade Topi Niemela for McCabe. I don't know.
You have a second round, or you have a first round pick next year, which that would be quite significant to get rid of. Then you're literally not drafting for... If you work in the draft department, you might as well resign.
You do have a third round pick this year. You have a first round pick in 2024. You have a first and third 5, 6, 7 in 2025. You've already spent
far away.
Draft picks in rounds 2 and 4 in 2025.
If you work in the Maple Leafs draft department, your job is
professional.
Been eliminated.
Professional scouts are going to be a little bit busier than the amateur scouts.
Anyway, I don't know. We'll have to ponder that. I don't know. I'm not ready to commit to that.
No,
I do want to talk about Patrick Kane, though. You mentioned him. And yes, we all myself included, didn't have the hottest of excitement after the last time the Maple Leafs.
The hottest of excitement.
I was going to say hottest of takes, but then I realized I did have a hot take, jokingly said that he was washed, and then, well, yes.
It's not the hottest of takes if you jokingly said it, but you did say he was washed. Yeah. Yeah, he did.
And then we laughed about it. But he did not look like Patrick Kane the last time we saw him. Well, last night, hat trick Patrick.
Nice.
He was rubbing some salt in the wound, maybe, about the fact that maybe the Maple Leafs went and shopped somewhere else. Maybe he wants to show that he's not washed. But last night looked like vintage Patrick Kane, and I don't think you can watch that game and feel like, oh, God, it wouldn't be nice to have him if he played like that all the time. And you mentioned it, 9 goals before last night's game. So big context is Patrick Kane isn't Patrick Kane of the past. But last night, it made us all laugh
It was the type of performance that was like, oh, you got Ryan O'Reilly?
Yes.
That's cute. Mm-hmm. This is what I do. And I wasn't in the wash camp. I was not going down that road, though, because you didn't know. You have to know.
Of course.
You know Ryan O'Reilly is going to give you his, whether or not he's the Ryan O'Reilly of 4 years ago, I don't think he is, but you know he's going to give you an honest effort. Patrick Kane, you didn't know if he wanted to play hockey in a different city. You just didn't know if that was the case. And he's still not showing it, but what he's doing is responding either verbally or tacitly to perceived slights, right? New York Rangers trade for someone else, and then he talks about how that's disappointing. The Leafs trade for someone else, and then he immediately burns the Leafs. Somehow, in this like Kane narrative arc here, the Leafs have made an enemy out of Patrick Kane when really, like, they didn't do anything. Mm. They just went shopping. And if Patrick Kane wanted to show that he wanted to be a Maple Leaf, you could have said it in Toronto. You didn't say anything.
Yeah,
and
you could have played a little, the media on purpose.
You could have acted like you gave even a slightest amount in the moment in the game. He looked like he did not care. He didn't look like he wanted to be mm-hmm. a Maple Leaf. I thought he showed and laid it out for you pretty clearly that he was not interested in this by the way he played. But then the Leafs go and make their move, and all of a sudden he's superhuman Patrick Kane again. So I worry about where this is going, frankly.
I'm not worried about Patrick Kane.
Because it's very Leaf. It's Leafy, 100% Leafy, to just be going about your business. And for some reason, you've pissed someone off, and that person now.
I think he's going to go to the Bruins.
He's going to stand up and be like, hey, I want to be a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning on second thought on March 1st.
I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to just put six people in LTIR.
We don't have any draft picks, but, you know, Chicago and Kyle Davidson, you should probably do right by this player and just kind of find that second party, double retain. We'll give you a fourth and a second, and we'll figure this thing out. That's what it feels like is going to happen. It's so Leafy.
After
or he'll
one
go
game.
To Boston. And if it is Boston, at least you got through someone. At least you got through the Lightning.
So he was asked post-game yesterday about what he thinks he's going to do at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. His response was, quote, I don't know. I think if I knew that, I'd probably make the decision already.
It looks like he clearly doesn't know. But he looks like the person that wants to be treated like king. Like, you went and got Vladimir Tarasenko? Ryan O'Reilly over me? Future Hall of Famer Patrick Kane? Are you crazy? You didn't wait for me? That's what it seemed like that's what he's trying to say.
And then they could go
at the
on,
end of the day, I don't want to go anywhere anyway.
And we could go on the next 2 weeks and not hear a single thing about Patrick Kane and the Chicago Blackhawks, as they said at the bottom of the NHL, and beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But last night, he put that in a little small sample size, and it certainly kind of slapped us in the face. But Maple Leafs lose again to the lowest ranked team, I believe, in the NHL as of last night.
Couple wins recently, they might have gotten out of the basement.
The Sportsnet stats, of course, you better be following Sportsnet stats. A great insight to the Maple Leafs losing to bottom five teams this season. They're 4-4-2 against bottom five NHL teams this season. For context, the two teams that they're battling it out with, the Bruins, 8-1-0. And the Lightning 7-0-2.
It's good records.
And so with this race now, it is anyone's game to get home ice between the Leafs and the Lightning. You cannot be losing to the Chicago Blackhawks. And I think a lot of excuses were made, such as it was a back-to-back on the road versus a rested team, but it is still the Chicago Blackhawks. And I don't like to make excuses for losing to teams that you shouldn't lose to, and those are certainly pieces of context. But look how you played on Saturday night, the invigoration of a new trade. You're coming in to that arena absolutely fired up. And yes, he had to travel. And yes, the Chicago Blackhawks were arrested. But once again, they're the Chicago Blackhawks. And it is, in a sense, an embarrassing loss to have. And it's frustrating because these points mean everything right now. How disappointing would we be if we get to the playoffs and the Leafs blew the opportunity to have home ice advantage? It would be really unfortunate because we've said that these games don't matter anything right now because you're just cruising the playoffs, but you're cruising and some team is speeding and they're going to pass you and it is anyone's game now. And you just can't lose to Chicago Blackhawks. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can really say, oh, they lost to Chicago. They're not ready. You know, they're not built for the postseason.
No, okay.
Like, I don't think that's a real take, but it can affect you and it has affected them before losing against teams you should beat. Hurts you in the standings, which in turn hurts your ability to actually beat the teams you're preparing for. If they lose home ice advantage, you can look at the, 15 points from, no, that would be 14, 16 points, sorry, from 18 games that the Lightning have gotten against these lesser lights. The Bruins have gotten 16 of 18 from these lesser lights. Not that they were going to catch Boston, but if you lose to Tampa, if you come third in the division,
you could circle a game like last night.
You went 4-4-2 against this team. You have a losing record against the bottom five teams in the NHL while Tampa took care of business, winning 7 of their 9 and getting at least a point in every single one of them so far. That's the difference. That could be the difference between second and third, and the difference between second and third and home ice in game 7 could be the difference when it matters the most. And that's why losing these games is, in some ways, unforgivable.
Leafs back in action tomorrow on the road in Buffalo, and then back home Friday night against the Minnesota Wild. And then they go on a little bit of a West Coast trip. Seattle, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, the Devils, all on the road. There's a lengthy time there to make some ground up, but there's some tough opponents around the corner, so it's not smooth sailing. Like, they're going to play some hard teams. They're going to play some easy teams. They're going to have some days where they're having a day off again in between with no practice. Like, this isn't an easy, easy stretch. Like, you need to really dial in here.
It's an experimental stretch, too. Like, it's time to put Ryan O'Reilly in different spots. It's time to maybe look at the power play, which is not functioning very well. Yes, we believe the penalty kill will improve with Ryan O'Reilly and Nolichari.
I think so.
But it's time to see if, you know, he's better anchoring a third line. Can he play with maybe Austin Matthews a little bit? I'm not really sure. The fit is great, but the fit isn't seamless. You have to make actual lineup decisions because Ryan O'Reilly is there, and it's on Sheldon Keefe. As much as he's losing sleep about how excited he is, he might be losing sleep about how it wasn't necessarily a slam dunk with him and John Tavares in the second line, at least so far.
Speaking of slam dunks, NBA All-Star Weekend has come and gone. We're going to have time to talk about that in the 7:30 winners and losers blocks, but your winner, your buddy, Mac McClung.
I just want to say
one of my highlights of the weekend, and I wanted to give you credit for bringing him up in the wake rank. I'm not going to give you my reasoning for winners and losers, but
you're not going to put me in the winners category?
You are, but you got to wait till 7:30. Okay. But I did want to play one clip because I wanted our text line to get involved, even though most people are still sleeping because they don't work today. If you're awake, say hello. Let us know that there's someone out there.
It's an SOS.
Okay, so this weekend we had a lot of Blue Jays action. More and more arrivals of some of the greatest Blue Jays coming down south. We did see this clip of Vladdy hitting. Was he at a driving range? I don't know where he was.
He was on a course.
But my God, that guy can play. I can't play that clip on the air because it's a video, but go check that out. But I wanted to play this thing from John Schneider, who was asked about the home run jacket, and I thought this would be a good discussion.
The home run jacket's turning into the Leafs goal song.
Okay, well, then maybe it's not. Let's play this clip, and we can be a part of shutting that up then. Here's John Schneider on the home run jacket.
It's up to the players. Anything that the players want to do is going to be cool. We've had the jacket for a couple years. It wouldn't be surprising if there was something different this year. But home runs are great, and I think you celebrate those. But it's also, I mean, I think the overall message, whether it's putting a jacket on or doing something in the dugout, is we want to celebrate more than just home runs. You know, we want to focus on catching the ball. We want to focus on getting on pace and things like that. So that's totally up to the players. We've talked about it briefly, but we'll see where we land with it.
All right.
Kind of feels like John Schneider might be putting an end to the
home run jacket. It's been in play since July 2021.
Yeah. Not too long. It seems like it's been longer than
that. Yeah, it's not that long, but maybe it's long because it becomes a conversation all the time. If the
Toronto
Blue Jays.
It's built differently now.
It is. If the Toronto Blue Jays decide no more home run jacket. We're switching it up. What do you want them to do instead? Because it is important to celebrate home runs. You don't need to be cheesy. You don't need to have some outrageous thing, but you need to celebrate a home run. Okay.
So I think John Schneider wants to celebrate, you know, advancing the runner from second to third.
That's also part of it. But this is a text line question, and you can think about it too, Justin. Mm-hmm. What do you want to see instead of a home run jacket if the Toronto Blue Jays decide to go that route?
It's a good question. I'm not really sure.
Okay. You have some time to think.
I think they could freshen it up, though.
I agree. New year, new expectations.
Lots of new bodies. Lots of those who were big on the home run jacket festivities. Not with the Blue Jays anymore.
I think that's part of it. Like, you won't see the same smiling faces putting on that jacket.
Leave it in the barrio.
I think what they should do, everyone sign it, auction it for Jays Care Charity.
Maybe one day you'll find it in a vintage shop.
Can you imagine? Anyway, I think it's run its course, and I'm ready for a new era of Blue Jay celebration.
That's exactly what we said about the Leafs goal song, and then on night one, Vladdy's going to hit one out, and the jacket's going to be on. It'll be like,
as long as they're hitting lots of home runs, I guess it's fine. But anyway, 590-590, what's your suggestion for the Blue Jays if they're going to go a different route with their home run jacket? Something different. We're going to take a break, and John Schneider is in my A-list. Not for this, but for something even better. That's on the other side of the break.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, it's time for the A-List. John Schneider making headlines for his comments on the home run jacket, opening the door possibly to a change. But the most important thing that he was in the headlines for this past weekend was being in the right place at the right time and saving a life on Saturday afternoon. Him and his wife were out for dinner or lunch, and a woman in the restaurant was choking. He thinks it was on a piece of shrimp. Nonetheless, he wandered over there and asked if she could help. Nobody at her table was helping. So he gave her the Heimlich maneuver and saved her life and was rewarded with a free beer. I think everyone was just kind of like, what's going on here? And this is in Dunedin down where the Blue Jays are at spring training. And he saved a woman's life just by being in the right place, right time, but also doing something. Apparently nobody really was trying to help this woman who was choking on her food.
Yeah, it was kind of strange the way he talked about it. He was like, no one was like, I was the only one worried. I was the only one who was like concerned in the moment. And he just like casually strolled over there and got the shrimp removed from the airway, I suppose. Great on John Schneider.
Apparently he had
some good vibes going into spring training for him.
Incredible.
Good story.
Apparently he hadn't practiced the Heimlich maneuver since learning about it in grade 6.
Could you step up in a big moment?
First of all, I don't think I've ever been properly taught how to. This made me think about it. Like, I understand.
I think I could.
You put the fist
this, right?
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, right.
Oh, under, it's fist? I thought it was like, well, you grab your.
Well, like, one is a fist. See? This is it. We need to learn, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it could happen to
and
anyone.
And it's like right under the sternum.
Right under. I know that part. I think you just kind of at that point.
Do you lift?
See? I'm sure we're going to get.
I think you kind of lift, right?
We should properly learn. This is a good piece of information for
it
listeners.
It reminded me, and I was trying to find it here. Sportsnet, I think, tweeted something with Miss Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Miss Doubtfire thing immediately came to my mind, and that's like one of the heartbreaking moments, I think, of my childhood, watching Miss Doubtfire. It was a sad ending. Or a sad part of the movie, at least. You know what I'm talking, right? And I think it was shrimp, too. Didn't the shrimp fly across the room in Miss Doubtfire?
Yeah.
Schneider was asked how far it like flew, and he said it didn't fly.
It wasn't that dramatic,
It wasn't Miss Doubtfire. I didn't lose my wig while I was doing it, either.
And then, listen to this piece of information. Very strange, but the second time a Toronto coach has saved a life. In 1931.
Oh, my God. I didn't think you were expecting 1931 stat.
In 1931, Maple Leafs skipper Dan Howley saved...
Skipper.
saved a girl from drowning while managing the Cincinnati Reds. I don't really understand that story.
Jay's skipper
Maple Leaf saved a girl from drowning while managing the Cincinnati Reds.
So he was whatever the skipper was while also the manager
that
of the Cincinnati
Reds? That is straight from an article that I'm reading. Don't understand it, but basically Dan Howley also saved
Shout out Dan
life.
Howley.
So Toronto coaches, heroes, and everybody should take some time to learn the Heimlich maneuver.
By the way, before we break, what was your advice to me before I went to the cottage weekend? What was the one thing that you suggested that I do?
Bring slippers.
Yes, and I did, and you were a lifesaver with them.
Really?
But I will say, and I laughed to myself, because the first thing I did when I took off my boots was basically drench my sock bust.
I told you.
It was actually perfect.
Like right at the door, was there not a puddle of snow?
There was a puddle, and I had to change my socks immediately.
And did you think of me?
Of course. Yes, exactly.
So anyway, I'm glad that I could be a part of saving your weekend.
John Schneider, lifesaver. Eilish Forfart, lifesaver.
Slippers, I'm telling you. Underrated. Quickly, I got a couple texts here about Blue Jays home run ideas. There are people listening, so welcome. Good morning. Happy family day. Benny in Newfoundland. Everybody takes a shot of maple syrup. It's kind of fun.
Someone with a tray just waiting for the home run hitter.
I'm here. Listen every morning. Nice hat to wear. Or Jays organization puts $50 to $100 for every homer in a charity pot.
It's not bad.
A cool hat, something a headwear would be good, like a cowboy
a little
hat.
Tax write-off.
Or like, what about an Argos helmet? Like something fun.
An Argos helmet.
Well, like to support another
team unit.
Team, you know, we're a big community here. I don't know, could be something. Chris from London. Morning, Eilish, I'm awake. Pierre Engvall needs to go. Pair of home run hockey gloves, Chris in London. Just finds Pierre a way to take a shot gloves at Pierre Engvall every day. But yeah, put on a pair of hockey gloves, maybe, I don't know, just high five with them. That could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Mike and Asinaboya, how about a simple fist bump or a high five in the dugout with no fear of losing an eye from flying sunflower seeds instead of a home run jacket or other gimmick? Time to put the pro in professional.
Ooh. Ooh. That's Ooh. A hot take this morning.
Yikes.
It's a John Schneider take, I think. I don't think he likes the home run jacket.
I don't think he does either. Okay. We got Frank Saravelli on the other side of the break. Let's break down this Ryan O'Reilly trade. Then we're followed up by winners and losers. We have Luke Fox joining us. And then at 8:30, Brian O'Reilly, father of Ryan O'Reilly, joins us.
And you skipped it over, the debut of Know Your Hamlet.
That's right.
7:30.
You want to learn about Clinton? I got you. Frank Saravelli on the other side of the break.